Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome, welcome to the Tara Styles podcast. Yay. My goodness, today I'm thrilled to share with you my good and longtime friend, sort of soul companion, Quentin Vinny. He's amazing. He's overcome so much trauma and abuse of his childhood and early adult life. And he's written about it so beautifully in his memoir, Strong in the Broken Places. So if that pulls on your attention, on your heart at all, I highly recommend that you read his book. It's beautifully written. It's so vulnerable in sharing, and it leaves hope and practices. I know Quentin because he found my yoga videos on YouTube, and we kind of found our way to each other. He was blogging about anxiety and stress and eating well and doing yoga for our friend's website, Mind Body Green, and all sorts of websites. So I met him actually at an event when he was on the other side, sort of building his career around this stuff and sharing about this stuff. And now he has a wonderful tea company called Equity, which has an amazing story behind it. He's figured out how to use tea as medicine and figured out how to translate all the ancient benefits of tea in a very practical and modern way. And it tastes super good. And he's got it in cans and it's in stores, and I'm so proud of him. And it's a wonderful company. Anyway, Quentin Vinny, here we go. Let's dig into it. See you on the other side. You were talking about anxiety before I heard anybody talking about anxiety, even with blogs. And I mean, we met at the Mind Body Green thing and they weren't talking about anxiety. Like Huffington Post wasn't talking about anxiety. Like these were like the outlets then. And Yep. And I just remember being like, you're sharing stuff that a lot of other people are going through that have different stories. And I don't know. It just, you know, you never win for being the first one, you know, but maybe
that's
now it's
so accurate. That is absolutely. And I felt that way, you know, because like the Mind Body Green audience, like you said, nobody was writing about anxiety in that way. You know, I kind of like started that whole conversation of mental health, and then like other people started writing about it, and you know, then it just kind of got drowned out. You know, a lot of people were wanting to get celebrities to talk about their mental health journeys. And it's like the average person can't relate to a rich celebrity's movie star's mental health journey. Like Right. They have access to everything. Like, what do you do when you have access to nothing except yourself? And how do you fight through it in that way? And that was really like the, you know, what that was for me, you know? And so I feel like the book was a little bit ahead of its time. I wish I would have waited until now, you know, if I could. But what's funny about it is like, I couldn't even have imagined my life being where it is now, let alone, you know, in 2017, 2016, when I was working on the book, to have an opportunity to like share a story of a life that I never valued. Mm-hmm. Right. To think that other people would take interest in that was mind blowing. Right. And so I was like, oh, yeah, I'm taking advantage of this opportunity immediately.
Yeah.
But I wish I had the foresight to wait, you know, and see where things would have ended up.
Well, I'm glad you had it out then, because, you know, it was so much, things were happening for you then. I know, like, different now. It's like, whoa, all this stuff with the tea company. But I don't know. I feel like it's cool that you had it, and now it's cool to be like I just want to share with everybody, but like, look, here it is, and it's not published. I mean, maybe it will get republished, or like you said, you'll repackage it or whatever. But it's like, there's some, I don't know what the word is, like street cred or just like coolness to be like, this has been going on for a long time. And how you shared, I mean, I got it again. I think I gave away my copy to somebody. I was like looking for it. I'm like, what the hell? Where is it? So I'm like been reading it on my phone on like Apple Books or whatever.
I love it.
Yeah. But like this, like how you set it up with like the yoga kind of structure, because that's what you were, you know, I love how you said like the green juice and the yoga, you know, kind of got you in, but like, you know, sharing your childhood and like all of that, you know, we didn't even have words for it. Like I remember meeting you and being like, wow, you're so put together and you talk about this so well. And then reading your, you know, rereading it now, like the trauma, you know, trauma is such a hot topic. Trauma and childhood abuse, addiction. These are things that are, you know, all the people that want to share stuff. These are the words and the topics and the things. So I feel like it's cool now to kind of bring it back up. And I do. I mean, I believe in your book. Like I believe in you, you know, forever, but I believe in Strong in the Broken Places. And I was showing Daisy your cover today. And she asked, I said, that's a picture of my friend and the, you know, the little kid on there. And she said, how come there's, you know, how come it's, you can't see the whole thing. And I said, well, he's been through a lot. And I think that was kind of an artistic choice to, you know, kind of show it in that way. She's like, oh, that's really, you know, she thought that was kind of cool. Like the, how you did the cover and everything.
I love it. Oh, Daisy. Yeah, no, we, you know, it's interesting. Cause like in this, I'm in the beverage space now. So everybody's like, oh, you know, I'm gaining like popularity in beverage, right? Like every time I do a keynote, I was in Texas doing a panel yesterday, and like people were like floored and in tears. But it's interesting when they come to me and they say, oh, wait a minute, you used to do yoga and you wrote a book? Like, and I'm like, yeah, man, I've been doing this shit for a long time. You know, like it's like, this is just the next phase of it, you know? But even with the cover, like, that's the only picture that I have of me and my parents together.
Wow.
It's the only one. I don't have another. I don't even know if there's another one in existence. Mm. You know, so, and I fought with the publisher back and forth because they wanted me to like, they took a like cropped image of me in the studio doing like a meditation and tried to put me in Baltimore City. I was like, look, this is corny. You know what I mean? Like, this is whack. I'm not doing this. I'm from Baltimore, like the real Baltimore. Don't try to crop me in, you know? And so when we presented that, they were like, this is it, you know? Yeah. So it was a fight with them on the creative side. They had me do a photo shoot and I'm like, they had Lululemon and all. I was like, look, I'm not fucking wearing Lululemon. Like, I'm not doing that. This is not what I'm talking about, some grimy shit. You know, and you want me to wear Lululemon on the cover? Like, get out of here. Come on, man. What are we doing?
Right. No, I think it's beautiful. But yeah, okay, thanks. So for folks that haven't read your book yet, and everybody will because it's incredible, do you mind sharing just, you know, whatever you feel like sharing from how you grew up and essentially, you know, it feels like a hot extraction. Like you had all this stuff your whole life, just, you know, unimaginable to most people. And then, you know, you kind of just like parachuted yourself to this different dimension by your own, you know, deeper. I love how you like say it with, you know, divine intervention, but that how that really just came through you and you said, all right, I'm going to go in these other places now. But how did that happen?
Yeah. You know, growing up in the 80s and 90s in West Baltimore was hard. You know, it was hard. I think it was, you know, it was significantly hard on us because we were going through a heroin epidemic at the same time that other major cities in America were going through a crack epidemic. Mm. You know, so the same way like crack hit Harlem and Brooklyn and it hit Chicago and, you know, Compton. Like we went through that in Baltimore, but it was heroin, you know, and my father. So my family is on both sides, you know, just extreme addiction, but it's primarily alcoholism. But my father ended up becoming addicted to heroin. And I found out later that it was actually his cousin that had him try it for the first time. And, you know, with a drug like that, all you need is one and you're hooked. And so you know, that began the destruction of, you know, the family dynamic between myself, my mother, and my father. And so, you know, when my mother ended up leaving my father, I was 2 years old, we didn't have a place to stay. And so, you know, we slept at her best friend's house, and then we'd go stay with an aunt, and then we'd go stay with my uncle. And so I don't remember us having our first place until I started elementary school. So I think I was in like kindergarten. So we're looking at like a 3 year time period of essentially like just not having a stable wow. place to live. And then, you know, just going in and experiencing like this extreme poverty and dilapidation and mm-hmm. violence. You know, West Baltimore was, you know, it was not a safe place to be, you know, back in those days. And, you know, then my mother moved us into Baltimore County, which is a suburb of Baltimore City. And she did that so I could attend schools in Baltimore County, you know, because they were at that time known to be, you know, a lot better academically. But they were also populated with individuals who didn't look like me. And so while I'm going to these schools, you know, I'm also existing in a different world. And so the expectations of who I should be as a student didn't match the reality of my circumstances, mm-hmm. you know? And so I was often like put in a box. I was often labeled, you know. It was the first time I'd experienced racism, the first time I experienced what it felt like to be othered. Mm. You know, and that was my academic trajectory up until high school, you know. And so going through those things, I mean, it's something I didn't even write in the book. Like, I was actually molested at seven, ugh. You know, and so like, and this was by a neighbor's son, you know. And so it was like, there were so many things that I had experienced and had gone through. And, you know, my mother, you know, doing the best that she could to raise me on her own. You know, in a city like Baltimore, you know, I was like trained to not be emotional, right? Like, being emotional wasn't going to get me any kind of sympathy or, you know, or even empathy, right? Like, I had to bite the bullet, you know, and just deal with it, right? And so, you know, I grew like really cold, but a lot of that came out in my anger. Because I was afraid and I was hurting, and, you know, I had all of these things that I didn't necessarily know how to put words to, because the only emotion that I was allowed to have was either happiness, joy, or anger. Mm. Right. And then anger was even, you know, like that was only allowed to a degree. Mm-hmm. And so growing up, not really being able to like understand my emotions or put words to how I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. I think as I got older, that really, you know, it came out in anxiety mm-hmm. and in depression, you know. And so, you know, going through that journey, especially as a young adult, was challenging. You know, I was diagnosed with anxiety, acute anxiety and depression when I was 16. They wanted to put me on medication. My mother rejected the idea. Spent the next however many years, you know, really just trying to figure out life. Started working, did some, you know, some not so good things in the streets of Baltimore. Things that I'm, you know, not proud about, but, you know, so it happened. Was shot at during that time. It was almost arrested during that time. You know, and so I think all of that, what we talk about now as trauma, really just came to a halt in my late 20s when I was officially diagnosed with severe generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder, mild to severe major depressive disorder, and PTSD. And I didn't realize what was happening until I started experiencing these debilitating panic attacks and sleep in the parking lot of the emergency room, you know, every night for like a month. And then I was given a medication that I was told would cure me. Mm. And then that medication became my new disease. I was addicted to that medication, was taking Ativan and Vicodin for migraines. So I was on a cocktail of prescriptions. I, you know, accidentally overdosed. I fell into a pit of depression. I attempted suicide twice. And it was only after the second suicide attempt that I really like threw my hands up. I said, God, you win. right? Like, left to my own vices, I can't kill myself correctly. So clearly I'm here for a reason. I just need to figure out what that was. And that's when I feel like yoga found me through juicing and then yoga and meditation. And you were the first person that I tried yoga with virtually. It was, you know, during the beginning stages of YouTube, and saw your videos, and you made yoga really accessible for me. You didn't use all of the shavasanas and the auto mukha svanasana and all that. Like, it was just like, no, we're gonna go into this lunge, and we're gonna do a high lunge, and then we're gonna go into a push up, and then we're gonna come down that push up and push back up again. And, you know, so it was like, really, it was language I could understand, because prior to that, I thought yoga was some weird sex cult type of thing. So I didn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, me too. I thought yoga was super weird. We talk about this so much, but yeah, like, when you actually do it, it's, you know, it connects you with all those parts of yourself. And I'm sorry to like ask again, like, I feel like you're probably asked now that you have, and I want to like continue the journey of like your life story in this way. But like, are you, I guess maybe a good question is, are you exhausted from being asked to share your story of your early life? Are you just like, I'm done, I'm on the other side? Or is this something that's like, okay, it's fresh every time, and you're obviously like, you know, I know it's a corny word, but like, you're not addicted to anything, you know, unhealthy, you know, you're living a very incredible, you know, busy life that's helping a lot of people. You have a great family. Like, does it feel like somebody else at this point? Or what does that feel like for you? I know you go on panels, you just got back from a panel. I'm like, I don't know, you're going to have time to talk to me, but like, what does it feel like to be sharing these stories? You just go on autopilot, or, you know, what is it like?
Yeah. Well, first, I always have time to talk to you.
I know, you're so nice.
it's interesting, right? Because sometimes I don't get exhausted by it.
Okay.
I will say that, right? Because I'm a firm believer that a shared experience is a saved life.
Mm.
You know, and the more I'm able to share and to speak and talk, the more we can, the more I'm able to help another person not feel so alone. You know, we were talking about earlier today, it's no fun when you're by yourself, right? When you're number one, when you're alone. And for a long time, like, I felt that way. You know, I didn't know anybody else that struggled with anxiety. I didn't know what anxiety was, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know what depression was. I thought these were like, you know, disorders of the privileged. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't have the privilege to be anxious. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the privilege to be depressed. Like, I was always in survival mode. So like, that was always what I focused on, right? And so, you know, I'm fortunate to be on the other side of it, but I think my life, my journey, my presence often gives other people permission to start to explore the areas of their lives that they need healed.
Mm.
Right. And so, yes, I'm on the other side of it, and I can talk all about the juices and all of the great things, right? But that's inaccessible to a person who hasn't quite gotten to a point where they're ready to start that journey. And mm-hmm. what I've learned is that, you know, especially in my community, because there's not a lot of people like me publicly,
mm-hmm.
that when I go into certain spaces, I give people permission to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. I give them permission to want something different, to try something new. Like, oh, this guy did it, and he comes from where I come from, and he's got dreadlocks and tattoos, and, you know, he was in the streets, and he's from Baltimore, and I'm, you know, from wherever in America, right? Mm-hmm. I've had a similar experience. If he did it, and, mm-hmm. you know, his masculinity wasn't challenged and questioned, and he's still able to show up every day and find happiness and joy in life, then why can't I?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of it for me, right? Because it's just the question of why can't I, or the statement of, I never looked at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Those two things are the beginning stages of somebody like identifying something that needs to be shifted and finding the courage to do it. right? I often say, like, most people don't change because they want to. They change because they have to. Mm-hmm. But I think by sharing, we in allowing people to see someone else's vulnerability, it can entice them to change because they want to.
Mm-hmm. So good. I can't wait to see. I mean, I don't know. We're all going to get old together, hopefully. But like, when you're 70 and you give these speeches, it's going to be like, whoa, shit. I mean, you're such a good speaker. When I first asked you, and you said yes, so thank you for that. Like coming to the studio and just talking to the training group, I was like, wow. Like I mean, you said that was the first time you spoke to a group like that. I thought you were kidding with me because you're just such a talented speaker, and everything you say is obviously from experience, but also that divine wisdom, and it comes through really, really clearly. And I think it just reaches so many people. So I'm so happy that you're doing it, and I'm happy that you keep sharing all the panels and all the things that ask you to say this stuff. But it's really cool.
Yeah. It was my first time. I was nervous because I was, you know, and it was interesting too, because like I was nervous to even come to the Strala studio after I realized how close it was when I was getting my 200 hour. Cause like you were, for me, like you were like, you know, the, like everything that you were doing and teaching, like literally helped to save my life, you know? And so you were on a pedestal to me for a long time. And I was like, you know, I was always afraid, like, damn, what if she's not cool? You know what I'm saying? Like, what if she's a jerk? And like, and she did all this amazing work and helped save my life, but we don't get along, you know? So I was like afraid to meet you for a very long time. And then, you know, there were multiple opportunities where I had the ability to go into spaces where you were. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to go. And then that Mind Body Green event, I was like, you know what? Screw it, man. Like, I'm going to go. And then I saw you, and as soon as I saw you, I left.
Oh no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I left. I left. I went in the hallway, and I had to give myself a pep talk. And I was like, "What the fuck are you doing, dude? Like, you know what I mean? Like, just go say hi and just say thank you. Like, that's it. And then you can go. You know. And it turned into something incredible. Mm-hmm. So you know, thank you for what you do and the impact you've had in my life, and then to meet. And then within 24, 48 hours, allowing me the opportunity to speak to the Strala trainees, which was my first public speaking event ever. So like you've been a part of a lot of firsts for me, you know, that's given me the confidence to continue to do the things that I do now.
Well, I knew you were cool. The moment I saw you, I was like, okay, there's got to be a story here. He's here. He's standing around. Like, I want to go talk to that guy. It looks really cool. You know, when you just have an instinct, like, I'm going to go. Yeah. So I'm glad we connected, obviously. So now all of our, you know, we have a lot of mutual friends and all that, but, sweet. I mean, you are always doing it. Can you share a little bit about, cause I think it's so incredible also, not just did you kind of extract yourself from your environment and the addictions and the circumstances, but then you became, you know, I guess slowly, but you know, you got yourself a book deal. That's a big deal. You know, you were blogging, you were writing, you were, you know, you started teaching yoga, you started telling people the green juice. You were like, you became like, I'm going to go, and through any means, any media, any, you know, way that we were sharing back then, like go and help people. How did you then become, or like get yourself to that place where you were like, I'm going to write, you know, these blogs. I remember there were like 5 tips on like green juicing and like 4 tips on anxiety. But I know also knowing you that you were, you know, you're smart with reading and writing and words and communications and sharing and all of that. So is that kind of like a thought out plan, or, you know, how did that feel from going from one to then the writing side of it and the sharing side of it?
Yeah, these are great questions, Steve.
I tried not to ask the boring ones.
You know, I was in the music for years, right? And so I did a lot of songwriting and writing, whether poetry or music or whatever. It was really like my medium of expression. And so when I was, you know, coming on the other side, well, I was still in the process, but when I was coming out on the other side of it, you know, I didn't have an intention of sharing my personal story at first. Carrie Shaw, she's a former editor for Mindbody Green. I was writing a lot of, like, you know, 5 green juice recipes to start your day, and, you know, 10 exercises for your core, and, you know, just 5 things to keep in your gym bag at all time, right? Like, just dumb stuff. Just as a way to kind of, like, get my name into the space. You know, I wanted people to know who I was. I just didn't want them to know everything. And I was working on an article once, and Carrie reached back out to me. She said, listen, this piece is great. And this was the first time I'd ever talked to Carrie, because she would normally just see the article, make whatever edits needed to be made, and then it would go up. But she emailed me and was like, listen, there's something that I feel like you're not saying that you want to say. So, like, say it.
Wow.
And I went back and wrote something else and fluffed up and sent it back. And she was like, listen, like, no, you're teetering on the line of something that I think would be very impactful. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Right. So, and she was like, listen, she said, if I send you a list of questions, will you answer them honestly?
Wow.
I said, yes, absolutely. She said, and then with your permission, can I take those questions and take those answers and input them into this piece that you're writing? I said, yes. And so she sent me those questions. I answered them honestly. She pieced it into it. And that was the first article on Mindbody Green that, like, went viral.
Wow.
You know, and, you know, and viral at that time and viral this time is completely different. But that was the one that, like, it got your attention. It got Chris Carr's attention. It got Gabby Bernstein's attention. It got, you know, I mean, it, you know, I had, I forgot the woman, Leanne Rimes reached out to me on Twitter because of that piece. And, you know, so, like, that was the piece that really, I was like, holy guacamole, like, who actually care?
Yeah.
You know, like, people are actually going through, like, the people who I think have the perfect life can relate to my imperfect life.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
There's, like, I started to, like, get a lot of, like, DMs. This was when Twitter was heavy. I wasn't even on Instagram at the time. And, like, people would just, like, DM me or tag me and, like, oh, this saved my life. Or they would email me, and this was incredible, and I'd never heard anybody say anything like this. And, you know, and I think the article was, like, the day I ditched pain pills for green juice or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think that was the title of it. And, you know, that let me know that there were a lot of people who were experiencing something very similar, and they were all looking for a way out. And so while I may have been one of the first to talk about it, there were thousands of people going through it at the same time that I was. And I was just a little bit ahead of them in finding my way, finding my way out on the other side of it. And so that was really the foundation of, like, wanting to share and write more, and you know, from those articles and then giving that keynote at Revitalize, I think that was maybe 2015. You know, I was, and then Huffington Post came on, and then, you know, I just started writing for all of these other places, and that, and I really was able to leverage that into a publishing deal in 2017 with Rodale. my publisher, the editor from that publisher actually went to Johns Hopkins University. So she had experienced what life in Baltimore was. And so when she read, you know, our pitch and everything, she was like, wow, like I have a personal connection to this. And I know that this is what people need. And so we were able to kind of like move it from that point.
Cool. Yeah, that's, I think that's empowering for people too, especially now. Like, I'm so glad that you and I both kind of were doing the things at that time. I mean, I know it was harder in so many ways, but now it's just so, it's so different. I don't know if it's harder or easier, but it's so much easier to, I think, for a lot of people that in our community that want to do stuff, they can distract, they can do a lot more of the wrong things trying to get there instead of just, you know, submit your ideas to a blog and things like that. So, but I think that's a great just story and sharing what's underneath the thing that you're doing. I mean, it just reminded me of yoga. Like, I share yoga because, you know, I just saw all these idiots like taking it away from people by making it complicated or, you know, abusive or dogma based. And I was like, no, yoga is great, but like, there's so many idiots. Like, and I don't need to be like the person who's like the best at it, but you can share it and help people connect without all of the, you know, gatekeeping, I guess, or whatever. I mean, there's so many words, like there wasn't even a word for like cultural appropriation back then, but I'm like, I'm not going to wear an Indian costume and speak in an Indian accent or even say these Sanskrit words because it, I'm going to do it wrong because I'm not from there. You know what I mean? How's anyone going to relate to me, you know, being like a Illinois kid if I try to pretend like I'm somebody else? But you've, you know, you've always been yourself. And I think that's just, you know, part of your superpower as well. All right. Can we talk tea?
Yeah, always. Absolutely.
So then, you know, there's like the green juice and the yoga and you figured out, can you just tell the story of the tea in the beginning? I mean, I made like a little bit of your old, like the, what's it called? Like one of your old like secret mixtures the other day, but now it's all fancy in cans and in stores and stuff. You know, the story behind, you know, starting it and, you know, just sending it out to friends and just kind of like figuring out, again, you really took this ancient wisdom of tea and made it, you know, so it's medicinal. So it like helps you and helps your family and helps other people and, you know, spreads a message. Like the name is so cool as well. And yeah. So,
yeah, you know, it's funny because I never thought in a million years I would actually have a product, let alone a beverage, right? Like tea, drinking tea was a evening ritual for me when I was going through this recovery process, right? It was like green juice, you know, yoga, meditation, more green juice. I was like vegan. And then at night, I would drink a cup of tea, you know, and that was just my ritual. You know, I got really into it, you know, when my mom bought me, I still have it. It's in, on top of my cabinet, this black cast iron, like tea kettle. And, you know, like, you know, it was like $150 at the time. It was like, you know, that was a lot for my mother to like invest and say, hey, like, this is something you like explore it. But that was really like the first time that I really like got into tea because, you know, I would go in the mall and they would have these tea shops and I would see like these loose teas. And I was like, well, if they have loose teas, what the hell am I doing buying these bags? Like, this can't be right. And you know, so I explored with it there. But then when, you know, my son was diagnosed with ADHD, he was 7. And, you know, up to that point, we had done everything from pulling him out of traditional schools, put him into a private online school. You know, he was going to like occupational therapy and behavioral therapy and like just, you know, all of these things, going to yoga. I mean, he went to Strala a few times, right? You know, it was like, and he was still like having a really difficult time when it came to school. Like he never had behavior problems. Mm-hmm. He just couldn't focus long enough, you know, like he was just from one thing to another, you know, constantly. And his neurologist had suggested that he drink green tea. She was like, hey, giving him tea. And I was like, no, why would I give my son caffeine? He already can't sit still. It's crazy. And she said, well, the thing with green tea is that it has a high level of L-theanine, which is an amino acid, I believe, that's great for calming the mind. And then you have this small amount of caffeine, which helps to trigger focus, right? It's not like coffee where you're wired. It actually helps you to focus. And so like that combination of the two was supposed to help. And it was like, okay, well, this is an easy way. Like, let's do it. Because we had, you know, made the conscious decision to not medicate because of my own experiences, right? And so we'd go out and try to buy green teas, and he would try them and wouldn't want to drink it, you know? And I was like, after I would try it, I was like, shit, I wouldn't want to drink it either, right? So the mission really became like figuring out how to make tea palatable to a, by this time he was nine, so to a nine-year-old. And that was the mission that we needed to solve for, right? And through a lot of trial and error and research and, you know, we were able to land on a blend that became a part of his daily ritual and routine. And then my wife and I started to just create tea blends for different things in the family, you know. And at the time I was working in nonprofit and ended up leaving my job, you know, and I looked at my wife and said, hey, why don't we make available to other families what we created for our own? You know, we had like 10 different tea blends we were just drinking and experimenting with. And, you know, so we did, and we launched in 2021, we launched our loose leaf because, you know, my goal, and this is, we were in Baltimore at the time, you know, we both wanted to like see what people would like, right, on the direct to consumer side. But because it was, we were just like in the middle of COVID, what we wanted to do was like see how things went after COVID, and we were going to open up a tea shop in Baltimore. So I had been talking to like attorneys. There was a new development called Port Covington. It's now called like the Baltimore Peninsula, but it was Port Covington. It's like the last waterfront property available in Baltimore. The founder of Under Armour, Kevin Plank, had purchased it, and you know, he was building a mixed use development, and you know, we had identified a retail space, and we were going to do that. And around that same time, you know, we had the Black Lives Matter uprising, and so, you know, while all of this was like really in the beginning phases, like I also took the social media to like call out the wellness world for, you know, talking a big game and not delivering on any of it, right? You know, you go and they put the black box, you know, and then you go and scroll down 3 weeks and like, you know, there's no other black stuff being discussed, right? As if it just started with Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, right? So I was just kind of like tired of, you know, of the wellness world, you know, finding things to attach itself to. And that caught the attention of a lot of individuals, including, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow. And then she and I connected, and I was able to get some teas to her, and I got some teas to you, and you introduced me to Tia Mori, and, you know, we got some teas to her. And, you know, I realized at the time that we had something, you know, through a lot of research and just identifying that America didn't really have much of a tea culture, and that, you know, the economy wasn't sure what brick and mortar would look like, you know, once people were able to like be people again and commune. So we realized like that 85% of tea consumed in America is in a ready to drink form. And so one of the feedback that we had gotten was like, hey, I made this tea. Was it supposed to taste like this? Did I do something wrong? How do I know if the water is 170 degrees if I don't have a machine? And, you know, and so, you know, then it was like, we realized like there's a process to this. Like I have, you know, like five different like water temperature kettles, and, you know, we're in it. We're tea people, you know, but not everybody is. And so it became a matter of accessibility. It was like, you know, with equity, like we there's a social component to that, right? We want people to prioritize their mental health. We want access to mental health based products to be equitable, to be accessible. And how were we doing that if what we were creating was inaccessible to so many people because they also needed a bunch of money to buy a bunch of additional tools. Mm-hmm. And so it was really about taking the guesswork out of it for consumers and creating something that was high quality, that was functional, that had efficacy, and that every time a person took a sip, they would know that they were prioritizing their mental and physical health. And that was really the foundation behind us doing the can teas. But, you know, overall, I'm still a loose leaf fanatic. I'm still studying to become a tea sommelier. I'm drinking my loose leaf oolong right now, you know, so, the teas and the cans are great, but, you know, I'm still a loose leaf dude at heart.
Oh, that's cool. That's like it's not like it's high end and low end or whatever, but it's sort of like, you know, I could see, you know, obviously equities taking off like wildfire, but like, and then you kind of, you know, everybody can kind of dig into a little bit more, be like, oh, this is how you do the other one at home and like kind of keep it going. So I think that's just amazing. I mean, I'm like, look at you, like a whole CEO, you know, all these like terms and stuff, like consumers and this and trends and research. I'm like, wow, it's so cool. It's so impressive.
It's funny because you and Michelle had said, Michelle Morrows from, y'all had said years ago that I mentioned something about doing tea. And I don't remember that at all. But I remember you used to drink a lot of coffee and I was like, tea, like, we got to get you some tea. Like, so it's like, it's incredible how the universe works because I still have no recollection of that.
Oh, that's wild too. I don't remember if this is in your book or maybe it was in one of the in-person events that I went to, but did you share that your mom used to put like, cause how you have this whole medicinal, like, you know, help heal the people in your family. Did your mom used to put like a potato on your foot for fever? Is that something? So did this kind of come from like passed down?
I think, you know, without knowing my true ancestry, right. Mm-hmm. I looked at my family tree, but I haven't been able to go past like 1930s, mm-hmm. you know. But yes, the you know, ancestrally, we didn't have access to like medication, and things like that. So we had to naturally find like other ways to like heal ourselves. And so when I was growing up, my mother, she never liked to give me medicine, you know, unless she had to. Like I had to be like dying for her to like give me a shot of penicillin or something, right? You know, so yeah, when I would have a fever, she would cut up potatoes and wrap them around my ankles and wrists with socks and I would sleep. And the potatoes would actually help to draw the fever out.
That's amazing.
I thought it was weird, right? Until like one day I had my son and he had a high fever and I didn't want to give him any Tylenol or Motrin or anything. And I did it. Mm. I had potatoes and I wrapped them up and it actually worked.
Wow.
It drew the fever out. He felt 100% better the next day. Oh. It actually worked. And she got that from my grandfather and you know, God only knows where he got it from.
Wow. And now you're healing like literally the world with your teas, with equity. My goodness. Oh my gosh.
I'm fine.
You're doing great. Are you kidding? Oh my gosh. Okay. One more question. I know you got loads to do today.
We can talk all day, T. You know, that shit.
I'll call you later. We just chat. But no, I think this is a good question, especially because you've been through so much and done through so much. And, you know, the last few years, I feel like another huge rebirth. But if there's like some kid walking by you just on the street or like in the grocery store when you're checking up on your teas, and, you know, is there something you'd say whispered in somebody's ear that just needs a little help before you hand them a tea and then hand them a tea? But is there, you know, one bit that you would just, you know, kind of blow in there and go with that?
Yeah, I live by three simple, I'm not going to say rules, but beliefs, right? The first is that God is real. Prayer works. And no matter what happens, you've already survived 100% of your worst days. Mm. Right. And so I think, and I have to remind myself of that all the time, especially, you know, especially now, right? That, you know, there's some days that I still wake up and I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. Mm. You know, like I don't want to do it anymore. Or I'm questioning, like, why am I even here? And like, what am I doing? And, you know, the imposter syndrome is so real, especially in entrepreneurship. So it's like, it doesn't matter for me sometimes, like how much I've accomplished and, you know, all of those things, you know, it's like, sometimes I get down on myself. But I also have to remember, like, every room that I'm in there because I'm supposed to be. Mm. And everything that I've prayed for, I've been able to get. I've manifested it. I've been blessed with it. You know, I celebrate 40 years on this planet tomorrow. I didn't think I would get past 21. Mm. Right. And so every day I celebrate life, even when things are challenging. Right. Only a few years ago, I told my wife, I said, for the first time in my life, I can actually say, like, I'm happy and I love my life and I want to be here. And I didn't feel like that for a very long time, right? A lot of people often would say, oh, you exude so much confidence and you've always done so much. And, you know, and it's like, I did those things because I was often told that I couldn't, you know, it wasn't because I was confident in my belief that I could. It was that I refused to allow someone else to tell me I couldn't. And like, that's how I lived for a very long time, you know? And so that confidence that people perceived from me was just the persistence in wanting to prove people wrong. You know, and so once I started to like really shift that mindset and recognize that everything that I prayed for, I got it. It may not have come when I wanted it. It may not have come how I wanted it, but I eventually got it. It didn't look the same. You know, it wasn't what I envisioned, right? It was completely different than I imagined it, but it gave me the exact same feeling that I wanted, right? And so, like that, there's nothing anyone can ever tell me to make me feel like God isn't real and that prayer doesn't work. But then the other side of it is, you know, when I do tell stories about what I've gone through and what I've experienced and what I went through, all of those moments were moments that I didn't think I could survive. Mm. And the fact that I'm here now and I'm able to look back in retrospect and share those things, still sometimes feel those emotions that I felt then, but to know that I did come out on the other side of it, right? You know, I've already survived 100% of the days that I often thought I wouldn't survive. So like, my track record for survival is stellar, you know? And so, and so if I'm ever able to talk to another person, sometimes they need to be reminded of that too, right? Their batting average is 100% you've hit a home run every time you've been at bat. Babe Ruth can't say that.
True.
Right. So, you know, we just need to, often we're told more about what we can't do and less about what we can, you know, and even less about what we have done. Right. And so I think just being able to have those reminders sometimes are absolutely necessary. So those would be the three things I would say. Oh,
that's beautiful. It reminds me, there's a line in your book about armor and how, you know, you felt like you had it. And just like about armor in general. I mean, like, we need the book of like Quentin one-liners, like the little quotes, you know, wisdom quotes. I'm just tired of like only old people like having these wisdom book. There's like so many younger people that have good ideas. I'm going to campaign for. Yeah. It's like, come on, we don't need some old person who's like already, you know, in their mansion or whatever. But you said something about armor and it was like really profound about how it can be this show of strength and you feel like you're protected, but then really suffocating inside. But it feels like that's everything that you just kind of summed up and how to take the armor off, but still feel protected. And it feels like now, maybe I'm just reading into to you, but it feels like now your armor is completely off and you're strong and comfortable and, you know.
Yeah, I found strength in my broken places. But, you know, the armor that I thought I needed for survival is not the same armor that I need to thrive. Mm. Right. And like, I think in every area of our lives, we should require certain things of ourselves, or society requires certain things, you know, from mm. ourselves. So for me, I needed to protect my vulnerability because I didn't know how to be vulnerable. Mm. Right. I thought vulnerability was weakness. And so I had to put on that armor to seem strong. You know, when truthfully I was feeling weak, you know, and I think so many of us, you know, we hide our vulnerabilities through anger or through silence or, you know, through, you know, addictions and all of these other things. Like we hide that vulnerability. We're not giving ourselves permission to fully be human. Right. And I think to be human is to be vulnerable, because it's through those vulnerabilities that we get to connect to another human. You know, we're all spiritual beings having a human experience, right? So, like, it doesn't matter. We all breathe the same air. We bleed the same blood, right? We all want and require the same things out of life, right? So why are we so afraid to share that, right? Why are we afraid to share our brokenness? You know, because if you can't understand my brokenness, then when I'm outside and I'm a black dude in America, and I'm outside and I'm smiling and I'm joyful and I'm frolicking and I'm doing all of those things, then you won't then understand my joy, mm-hmm. because you don't understand my pain. Right. And so I think and that works collaboratively, like that works as a community. And I think that's what you've done so great with Strala. You've helped to build a community where people feel safe and comfortable just being themselves. Like, to me, that's the foundation of Strala's practice. Like, your down dog's not going to look like the person next to you, right? Oh, if you want to go and playtime and handstand, do it. If not, don't. It's fine, right? I remember being in class doing a completely different routine than what you were teaching, and it was fine. There was no rigidity. There was no, what are you doing? We're supposed to be in Warrior II right now. Like, there was, you know, I'm in child's pose. Well, who cares? I'm doing forearm stand. You're doing warrior. Like, it's fine, right? It's giving people permission to show up how they are for who they are, wherever they are. Mm. And I think that's what we need to get more of in this world.
Mm. Well, you're doing a great job of all the things. And Strong in the Broken Places, we're going to just put it on the front shelf of Barnes & Noble. Take it from the shelf where it is and put it in the front. It'll get there because it's amazing. And then Equity, you know, it seems like it's just taking over in all the stores and all the places and just keep growing. But is there any place you're sending folks now to find more about you and more about all the things?
Yeah, we're right now in about 400 Sprouts locations nationwide. Well, in 23 states. You know, we're working on some additional retail partners, a few being in Illinois specifically. So that'll be dope. It'll be a great way to get to Illinois pretty soon. You know, but yeah, you can find everything on equity.com, EQUITEA. You know, and as we continue, this is a hard, tough road, but you know, we are growing and things are looking up.
Amazing. I can't even imagine, you know, it's a big deal. But thanks so much for taking the time. You're the best.
Thank you. I appreciate you always.
My goodness, how inspiring is Quentin Vinnie? Make sure to add Strong in the Broken Places, his book, to your shelf for your healing and inspiration. Pass it along. It's a great one to buy a copy for a friend. And if you are hanging around near a Sprouts grocery store, make sure you go in there and get yourself some Equity as well and share the love on that. It's so yummy and delicious also. Yay. As always, you can practice with us on the Strala Yoga app. Let us know if you need any help joining. We have practices every day to connect you to your center, help you slow down, find that ease, enjoy and cultivate a radiant, healthy body and mind so you can live your life and serve in the world the way that you are able to when you feel good and connected. So big hugs. Thanks so much for being here. Thanks for listening or watching, and see you soon.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.